Welcome to another episode of PhD Dibinen Beyond the Lab. Today, we'll explore the fascinating world of biomarkers across different diseases, cardiovascular and liver. Let's begin. Hello, everyone. We are Alexandra and Francesco, first and third year PhD students in biochemistry and molecular biology at the University of Bologna. And we're here with Giulia and Enrico, who are first and second year PhD students in internal medicine and also practicing physician at Sant'Orsola Hospital in Bologna. Biomarkers are measurable indicators of biological state. Think of them as molecular clues that help us to detect disease, assess its severity, and even predict its progression. Understanding the mechanisms, the how and why behind disease development at the molecular level is just as important, and it guides us toward more effective treatments. Let's start with the cardiovascular system. Over the past decade, microRNA have emerged as some of the most promising molecular biomarkers. MicroRNA are tiny non-coding RNA molecules that play a crucial role in regulating gene expression. They act like master switches controlling processes such as cell growth, inflammation, and tissue repair. When the heart or blood vessels are damaged, like during a heart attack or the development of atherosclerosis, specific microRNA become dysregulated. Some increase dramatically, others decrease. What's remarkable is that these changes aren't just confined to the affected tissue. These microRNA are released into the bloodstream, making them easily detectable with a simple blood test. This opens up exciting possibilities for early diagnosis. For example, microRNA such as miR-1, miR-133, miR-208 and miR-499 rise sharply in the blood after a heart attack, often before traditional markers like troponins. Detecting these changes early can lead to the quicker interventions and better outcomes for patients. But microRNA do more than just signal the presence of the disease. Their dysregulation can actively contribute to disease progression. Certain microRNAs can promote inflammation in arteries or drive harmful remodeling of heart tissue after injury. This dual role, as both indicator and driver of the disease, makes them attractive not only for diagnosis but also as potential therapeutic targets. Of course, challenges remain. We need standardized methods for measuring microRNAs and large-scale studies to confirm utility across diverse patient populations. But the potential is immense. And the story doesn't end with microRNAs. The world of small non-coding RNAs is rapidly expanding. Thanks to refined sequence technology and broader integration of omics data, researchers have now discovering new novel RNA species with regulatory functions. Among these, Turner-derived fragments, TRF, are gaining particular attention.
Once thought to be random degradation products, TRF are now recognized as a functional molecule generated in response to stress, capable of influencing key biological pathways, and potentially serving as next-generation biomarkers in cardiovascular disease and beyond. TRF are an overclass of small regulatory RNAs generated from transfer RNAs through precise cleavage events. Unlike random degradation products, these fragments are produced in response to defined stimuli such as oxidative stress, hypoxia, viral infection, or tRNA modification defects. This stress condition activates specific enzymes, including Dicer and angiogenin, which cleave tRNA into fragments of defined sizes and origins. Depending on where they are cleaved from the tRNA molecules, these fragments are classified but not limited to 5' TRF, 3' TRF, internal TRF. A related group known as tiRNAs or tRNA halves are typically longer and are generated by a cleavage in the anticodon loop. Functionally, TRF can regulate diverse processes central into cardiovascular pathophysiology, including translational repression, modulating of RNA binding proteins, and epigenetic regulation. Some TRF even mimic microRNA function by binding argonaut proteins and repressing target mRNAs. This highlights their potential role not only in gene silencing, but also in fine-tuning translation in a context-dependent manner. In cardiovascular diseases, TRF have emerged as dynamic regulators of processes such as cell proliferation, apoptosis, hypertrophy, and hyperinflammation. Their role in these pathways makes them not only mechanistically interesting, but also potential biomarkers and therapeutic targets. But let's take a look at some key examples. In atherosclerosis, a chronic inflammatory disease that underpins most cardiovascular events, the repression of certain TRF is consistently altered. Certain TRFs, like TRF-GlyGCC, are upregulating and promoting the endothelial and smooth mass cell proliferation, contributing to plaque formation. In aortic dissection, a life-threatening condition where the inner layer of the aorta tears, TRF from the tRNA methionine and cysteine influence how vascular smooth cells multiply and migrate, worsening vessel wall weakening. In myocarditis, an inflammatory disease of the heart muscle, TRF from the tRNA of glutamine rise in early stages, suggesting a role as early markers of disease. Even in heart failure, which remains one of the leading causes of morbidity worldwide, TRF are not silent. Fragments from tRNA cysteine, lysine, and methionine under protective metabolic conditions support stress responses, protecting from oxidative damage, and hinting as a therapeutic relevance. What makes TRF particularly attractive is their high stability, abundance in circulation, and tissue specificity. Many are found in serum, plasma, and even extracellular vesicles, suggesting they are not only stable, but also actively secreted. These traits favor the use as non-invasive biomarkers, much like microRNAs. And emerging data indicate that specific TRF signatures can correlate with disease onset, stage, or severity, paving the way for the use as an on-site tissue biomarkers or as a circulating indicators in blood-based panels, as seen in neurology and oncology. As the sequence advances and machine learning integrates molecular and clinical data, we may soon uncover TRF-based signatures that personalize cardiovascular care.
While RNAs open up exciting new frontiers, protein still holds center stage in many clinical conditions. Indeed, many diseases rely on proteins as a biomarker, and that brings us to our last topic, the role of albumin in liver disease, particularly in the compensated cirrhosis. Although albumin is the most famous for maintaining oncotic pressure and keeping fluid in the vascular space, its function extends far beyond the fluid balance. Albumin is produced by the liver and it is the most abundant plasma protein, responsible for 70-80% of oncotic pressure. Yet it also binds and transport hormones, fatty acids, drugs, bilirubin, and bile acids via multiple high affinity sites, detoxifies endogenous and exogenous toxins, including reactive aldehydes and bacterial products like lipopolysaccharide by sequestering them in its binding pockets, serves as the principal circulating antioxidant, scavenging reactive oxygen and nitroxygen species through its free thiol at cysteine 34 and by chelating transition metals that catalyze free radical formation. Finally, modulates inflammation and immune response by binding pro-inflammatory mediators like prostaglandin E2, influencing leukocyte activation and stabilizing endothelial barriers to prevent capillary leak.
To see why these non-oncotic roles matter, let's consider cirrhosis itself. Cirrhosis is a progressive disease characterized by diffuse fibrosis and regenerative nodules that disrupt liver architecture and function. clinical course of cirrhosis splits into two stages. The compensated cirrhosis, when the liver still meets metabolic demands, and the compensated cirrhosis marked by ascites, variceal bleeding, encephalopathy, hepatorenal syndrome, and other life-threatening complications. As the hepatocyte loses function, albumin synthesis falls, and chronic inflammation plus oxidative stress damage its structure. This means that even if total albumin levels look acceptable, a large proportion of those molecules may be dysfunctional. An example of molecular damage is oxidation at cysteine 34. In healthy albumin, this residue neutralizes free radicals. In cirrhosis, cysteine 34 oxidizes, sometimes reversibly, sometimes irreversibly, yielding three main isoforms. The first one, the mercaptan albumin, the native reduced form with intact antioxidant and binding function. The second one, the non-mercaptan albumin 1, reversibly oxidized as cysteine-34, and its function can be partially restored. And then the last one, the non-mercaptan albumin 2, irreversibly oxidized to sulfinic acids, functionally inert. Beyond oxidation, albumin suffers glycation, proteolytic truncation, dimerization, and ischemia-mediated alterations. It changes, reduces its protective roles, and may even fuel systemic inflammation.
Faced with this complexity, we need to shift our question from how much albumin is there to the question how much of it actually works. This reframing leads to the concept of effective albumin concentration, that is the absolute amount of circulating albumin retaining full non-oncotic activity. Studies show effective albumin outperform total albumin in predicting outcomes. In a cohort of over 300 hospitalized patients, effective albumin declined progressively with cirrhosis severity and predicted acute and chronic liver failure and 90-day mortality better than total albumin amount. These findings underscore that functional integrity, not merely quantity, drives albumin's clinical impact. However, it should be remembered that human albumin is not only a biomarker, but it is also a treatment in patients with the compensated cirrhosis. Clinically, albumin infusions are used for preventing renal failure in spontaneous bacterial peritonitis, averting post-paracentesis circulatory dysfunction, and treating hepatorenal syndrome. Moreover, long-term albumin, so weekly infusion of human albumin for several months, has more recently emerged as a potential disease-modifying strategy. The ANSWER trial in 2018 demonstrated that weekly infusion can raise the serum albumin, reduce incidence of complication of cirrhosis, and improve quality of life and even prolong survival in patients with uncomplicated ascites.
Yet a critical gap remains. How does exogenous albumin affect effective albumin? If infusion can increase the pool of functional albumin, we may tailor treatment to restore albumin's full spectrum of protective roles, and not just its oncotic effect. To answer this, we are conducting a prospective observational study at IRC Sant'Orsola Malpighi in Bologna. This study will enroll patients with a compensated cirrhosis at time of long-term albumin initiation. Patients will receive a weekly albumin infusion as recommended by national guidelines. We will collect baseline and serial blood draws over 3 months. The endpoints will be four. The first one to determine the change over the time of effective albumin concentration by mass spectrometry and redox assays. the second one to determine the levels of non-mercaptan albumin 1 and non-mercaptan albumin 2 isoforms, the third one to determine albumin binding and detoxification efficiency via electron paramagnetic resonance, and the last one, the correlation with clinical outcomes, renal function, paracentesis frequency, hospitalization. By capturing immediate and sustained changes in effective albumin and isoform profiles, we will determine whether long-term albumin therapy truly increases the functional albumin pool and translate into better trajectories.
In conclusion, from small RNAs like miRNAs and TRFs in cardiovascular disease to albumin in cirrhosis, biomarkers are evolving from static lab values to dynamic indicators that reflect real-time pathophysiology. As our molecular tools advance, these biomarkers could not only guide diagnosis but also personalize treatment, opening the door to a new era of precision medicine across disciplines. And with that, we wrap up today's episode. Thank you for joining us on this journey. Stay tuned for more episodes of PhD Dibinem Beyond the Lab. Until next time.